Keep some room in your heart for the unimaginable. Mary Oliver. For a map of New York and Quebec in the Revolutionary Era, please visit MillryLatimer.com/audiobook. Emmeline Cartwright, Professor in North American Colonial History. Chapter 1. Out on the balcony, the air was still. The first chill of October touched my skin. Lake Ontario, below my condo, shone with an autumn twilight. Off in the distance, the lights of the city began to glow. There was a beauty here that drew me to stay. Yet I needed to leave what had been home to me for the last 14 years, since the day I moved from where I'd raised my girls and come to this place where I'd learned to be resilient and self-sufficient. I'd written my letter to the dean, expressing my decision to retire. I was 67. I could have retired at least 3 years ago, but now, for inexplicable reasons, I was turning my life on its head. Nothing felt rational, except this sense that it was time. But time for what? I wished Hannah would get here. How she can be a daughter of mine and never be on time is a mystery. I felt nervous because I'd said nothing to either Hannah or Zoe about my final decision to retire. I wasn't sure if they'd be hurt that I hadn't said anything, or if they'd just say it was up to me. But my perturbed state held more disquiet than just the fact of my retirement. I was having disconcerting dreams, and I was feeling a sense that time was running out, becoming my enemy. Yearning for more life, whatever that meant, haunted me. A month ago, I'd found a therapist, first time in my life. When the buzzer sounded, I jumped. Hannah, oldest and wise daughter, was at my door. Maybe when I tried to explain to her, I'd know then what's unsettling me. She'd always been able to sort out my jumbled thoughts. "Mom, could you open the door? I brought coffee. My hands are full." When I opened the door, I smiled at my eldest, her hair awry, tied back with a red and white scarf, that familiar look on her face that said, "I have a half an hour, then I have to go." I slid her oversized bag over her arm, over the coffee in her hand, and beckoned her into the front hall. "Do you have a research meeting today?" I asked. I knew that my voicemail probably alarmed her, because I seldom called or left messages for either Hannah or Zoe early in the morning. She walked on into the kitchen, put both coffees on the counter, rustled herself out of her coat, and turned to me. "I have to be out of here in half an hour, Mom, but I'm here. Is something wrong? You never call me or leave messages in the morning." I smiled to myself, feeling the comfort of that predictable moment when nothing else felt predictable. "Come, sit." I pulled a leather stool chair from the kitchen counter, where I often sat in the morning looking out at the lake and the trees below. "I need to talk over something I've been thinking for a while. I thought I'd talk to you first and then let Zoe know. What I need is your clear, decisive mind." Her eyes, blue as they were, sharpened and became a bright morning sky blue. I had her attention. I straightened my shoulders, took a sip of coffee, and spoke the thoughts I'd been unraveling. "When your dad left all those years ago..." Hannah shook her head. "No, Mom. We've been over and over all those years, too many times. We're fine." I heard the impatience in her tone. "No, please wait, Hannah. This is not old ground. I'm not talking about the past. I'm talking about the future. Sorry, Mom."